Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, where we export Swedish unicorness.
No buzzwords, just real life stories with Sweden's most innovative thinkers and doers. A podcast made by me, Sandra Bourbon.
And me, Sara Hermansson. It's time for our second episode in the mini-series we do in collaboration with Swedish Mining Innovation. Together with Jenny Greberg, the Program Director of Swedish Mining Innovation, we discuss the mining industry in general in different topics. Today's focus area is social innovation in the mining industry. Is it even possible to start up a new mine in a society and have good collaboration and actually having the population supporting and being in favor of the mine operating? To discuss this, we invited Åsa Allan, Deputy CEO at Karnis Iron, a new mining company up in Pajala in northern Sweden. Let's hear her out and see what she has to say about this subject. Hi, Jenny, and welcome back to Swedish Innovation Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much, Sara. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm excited to continue these recordings. I really enjoyed the last episode, so I'm looking forward to today. Last episode, we talked about, you know, general mining in Sweden and what is possible to mine here, and also our export, I would say, of innovation and knowledge within in mining in general. Do you have any takes from last episode that you liked?
Yes, I think we had a very good discussion, and Erika, who was our guest then, I mean, she knows everything about what we have in our bedrock in Sweden and how we can use it and so on. I think what we didn't have time to talk about really was how much metals we actually use in Sweden. And we talked about copper, and that actually not many people know that in a car that has a battery car needs about 5 times more copper than a normal car. And those kind of discussions are quite interesting because it's more easy for any person to understand the need for metals and minerals when you talk about those things, like how much, if I want to buy a battery car, okay, that means we have to mine more copper. And that's not a given for everybody.
No, and I think we never mentioned the numbers. I think that's a good number to have, that you need a lot more copper for the electric vehicles than the petrol ones. But also what I took with me from the episode as a whole was that we eat a lot of cake, if you would see the whole raw material and metal mining as one industry. We eat a lot from it, but we actually don't bake that much as we can in Sweden. And it's maybe something that we should think of going forward, that we might need more mines in Sweden and in other countries. I think it's definitely a relationship where some countries could mine a lot more, but they consume and import a lot of metals and minerals from other countries, and that shift probably needs to be looked over. So that I definitely took with me. Kind of everybody wants the electric vehicle, but no one wants to live next to the mine.
I fully agree, Sara, and I think that's a really important discussion to have, that we at least should contribute with the share that we actually use in Sweden. And that's not only because it's good for trade and for our competitiveness as a country, but also for, I would say, sustainability reasons and moral reasons. We can produce these tons of whatever metals we need much more sustainable than any other country can actually do now. So it's important for many reasons.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's why you and I discussed having this topic as a special episode that we're going to do today, social innovation, or basically how do you start up a new mine in conjunction with the society where you have the mine, and how are there any good examples out there, and what examples, at least in Sweden, have we had that been a lot in media? I mean, I would just add my general view to it, not being in the mining industry. What I read about it is that there's always a conflict between the company that are doing the mines, but also with the Sami people living up in north of Sweden, having a lot of reindeers that they use, and they use the land and the forest for the reindeers and for their culture, and they've been there for a very long time. So you always see that that conflict and read a lot of newspapers. But that's just my general view. I haven't worked in the mining industry. So I'm gonna, yeah, I'm looking forward to have a more, how to say, nuanced discussion, or a polarized discussion, not so polarized, I mean, discussion regarding this and how it actually works in reality.
And I would emphasize that it's, I mean, this is a conflict of interest, and it's not only between the mining industry and the reindeer industry or reindeer branch. It's also between maybe tourism, wind power, a lot of these activities that needs areas. But let's continue to talk about that.
Yeah, and for this episode, you found a very good guest to talk about this with. So with us today, we have Åsa Allan, which is the deputy CEO at Karnes Iron. Welcome, Åsa.
Thank you so much. So, it's lovely being here today with you.
Thank you. And tell us a little bit about Karnes Iron. What do you actually do? Do you have a mine? Where is it located? For how long have it's been running?
Well, we are a small mining company, and we have one operating mine today that's located in the municipality of Pajala in the northernmost part of Sweden, right next to the Finnish border. And we are a very young company. The company was founded in 2018, when we actually took over the bankruptcy estate after Northland Resources that opened the mine here in Pajala in 2012. So the mining in this region, or in this municipality, has only been around for about 10 years. So it's we are a new company, and mining is also new here in this area.
Interesting. So I guess here is going to be a lot of examples then on if you start up a new mine in a society that hasn't had mining before, how could you do it in a smart way and see how it's going for you then. It's going to be interested to listening to.
Yes, well, I hope I will be able to contribute with some aspects at least.
Yeah, but first, our two get-to-know questions. Maybe this is an easy one for you, but favorite mine you ever visit, maybe besides the Pajala mine?
Besides our own mine, that's very difficult. Me being a geologist in the background, I actually have to mention that the most interesting deposit that I visited is actually also an iron deposit, but located in the Andes in Chile, and it's named El Laco, and it's located at about 5,000 meters above sea level, and has a very interesting geological it is a very interesting geological formation. There's been some small-scale mining there, but from a geological point of view, that must be the most exciting mine that I visited.
Cool, thank you. And you mentioned you come with a geology background. How did your interest in mining start? Was that during your geology studies, or how did you get into this area?
Well, I think it was, you know, quite often it's nothing that you plan. And I was very lucky after my first year of geology studies in Finland, where I studied, I got an internship at an exploration company, and did a lot of field work, and that's how I got into exploration and thereafter into mining. So it wasn't anything really that I planned, but after I got into the exploration and mining business, I found it very interesting and very challenging. And it's a little bit of a treasure hunt to find ore. And with time, of course, you know, the different aspects of mining and the deeper understanding that I got of, you know, the needs for society, you know, to actually have these metals for the lives we live, made it much more exciting, and also the background or the possibility that I've had to actually work within the municipality and to see how mining interacts with society and so on. So just the complexity of these operations are really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So it feels like you're definitely a relevant person to talk to then if we want a less polarized discussion. So you've both been at the municipality side and now you're at, how to say, the business or the company side that actually owns the mine. What would you say is the biggest difference working at the municipality or actually working at the mining company?
Well, of course, you know, working for the municipality, the objective and the role that the municipality has is much broader in that sense that, you know, the municipalities run the schools and they have the obligation to look after the elderly people. And it's such a broad area that they operate within. While a mining company as a private company also has to be a profitable operation. I mean, the municipality operates based on the tax that you get from the people living in the municipality, but also the support that you get from the government. So of course, it's both the financial side of it, but also the objective of the actual, if you would say so, operation.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, you go in with different perspectives again.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, we need to go then to the actual real example here with Connie's Iron. So can you tell us a bit how you see that, how did it all start? You took it over, it was already started, but it was still pretty young. I mean, it was just 10 years ago, so it hasn't been around for forever. What has actually happened in the society in Pajala when this mine started, and how has it developed? And also, I'm thinking, how was the thinking of the actual people living there before it started? Like, were they happy about it? Were they afraid? I guess it was different voices. And how is it today? Has that view of the mine changed somehow?
Well, it's quite interesting. I actually think we have to go back 10, 15 years in time when Northland Resources started up here. And I think why we today have a lot of support for our operations goes back to that time when they first came here and started the exploration work and started up the operations. And that has to do with the good work they did when it came to information, but also to establish relations with both the municipality, but also the local communities. And I think that is one of the, you know, key aspects to when you start something, you know, from the beginning, you have to establish these relationships. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult to afterwards go back and rebuild them. So I think that's really the first key to why we still have a very strong local support for the operations.
I see. And how does it work for the people actually living there? Like, do the mine give work opportunities, and is the people living in that city usually interested in working in the mine, or do you need to, I say, import a lot of people who is going to work there as well, and how do you integrate that with the society?
Well, I think we are very lucky in that sense that the people in Pajala are very used to the mining industry in that sense that they have been commuting and been for generations working within the mines in Kiruna and Gällivare, in the other mining regions nearby. So the population and the people knew what mining was all about. And I think that was actually beneficial for us. And also from the aspect that they knew that the mines will create jobs, it will create possibilities, and it will also create a good income for them and for the families. So, and that's something that's been shown also in a study that the university in Luleå made a few years ago, that among the population in Pajala, that where they showed that actually the hope for a better income was very, very important, and if that was fulfilled, then also the trust and the acceptance for the mine was generated.
I see. But what has been the biggest drawbacks, would you say, for the last 10 years regarding this mine? I mean, have there been any big obstacles or discussions where you have got stuck in the collaboration?
I would say when it comes to the local people and to the municipality, we have had strong support all the way through, and even the bankruptcy and that period, the 4 years when the operation was on a standby, even during that period, people were still hoping for the mine to restart. However, I think that after we started, most people were a little bit more wary. Maybe they didn't want to hope too much, because they wouldn't get disappointed again. I would say that where we have found the most challenges is actually when it comes to the legal parts and the permitting process and the different permits and legal aspects of the mining. That's where we, as many other companies and industry, have struggled a lot.
And what is the struggle in the legal process? Is it that it takes a lot of time, or that we have legislation in Sweden slowing the process down for new mines? Or what would you say is the biggest obstacle there?
Yes, I would say that the processes are so timely, that it takes such a long time, that really creates a lot of problems for us. And today we have a life of mine of about 5 years. We are now expecting a verdict from the Land and Environmental Court in the mid of November that will hopefully give us the possibility to operate in the area for another 20 years. But we need to, even if the process itself is very challenging and frustrating for us as a company, it also affects the community a lot, and it affects the members of staff that don't know if they want to invest. Do they want to buy a house? Do they want to invest here before they can feel secure that there is a long-term operation here? And for the municipality, they don't know if they can invest in building more flats, more houses, and the whole planning side for the municipality is also difficult when you don't know if we have a permit or not.
Of course. So kind of this whole pending process is not only for the company, it's also for the society's future, because I guess that decision would really determine one way or the other how the development will go.
Absolutely, and it's also very frustrating for the local villages, where we know we will have to actually take over some properties and some houses, and they don't know, living in that vacuum, not knowing what will happen. Will my property, my house, have to be sold to the mining company or not? So that is, I think, that social aspect of the slow permitting process is extremely important.
Yeah, and we said it quickly in the beginning, but as a person who's not working in the mining industry, what you usually read about mines in Sweden in the newspaper is that it's a conflict between mining and the Sami people who lives in the north of Sweden. Have you experienced any of those issues with your mine up in Pajala, or what's the situation up there?
I think in general we've had very good collaboration with the local Sami village that is directly affected by the mining operation and the land that we are using, and we have an agreement with them how we should cooperate and how we should compensate them for the land that we are actually taking for the mining operation, because that is of course the fact that they will lose some land that previously was used for the reindeer herding. We have also a complex logistical chain where we have heavy transport on public roads, and there we have one example as well where we collaborating with another Sami village regarding trying to minimize the amount of reindeers being killed on the roads by the traffic there. But it's of course very complex questions, and each Sami village have their own challenges depending on how their land looks and how their specific area is being affected by an operation. So I don't think that you have to look at each of them individually to see how they are being affected.
Yeah, no, I see. So it sounds like the biggest part you need to do is to put in the put yourself into the problems and trying to see how you actually could solve them.
Yes, I think so.
Cool. And Jenny, I'm inviting you into the call here. What would you say for Connie's Iron and the mine in Pajala as an example? Is that how it's done in the rest of Sweden as well? Or how do we usually work between the society and the mines?
Oh, I think Kaunis Iron is a very good example, and it's also not only with a Swedish perspective. I think if you look at new mines being established internationally, I think Kaunis Iron is a very good example on how to make it in a good way and how to keep this very important dialogue with all stakeholders, both very close to the mine operation, but also a little bit more distant. So also Kaunis Iron was very... Or then it was, of course, Northland Resources. They were at a very early stage, they did collaboration with Luleå University of Technology on studies on how to interact and how to avoid these conflicts of interest. So I think it's been, all since it started with Northland Resources, it's been a very heavy and important job done by the people in these organizations to make this in the right way. But we have another very good example also in Norrbotten, and that's LKAB with their mines in Kiruna and Malmberget. Those are, of course, much older and has been there for many, many years. But the societies in Malmberget and Kiruna are very interacting with the mine. And, of course, they are in some sort of symbiosis. And I think it's a very good example. Because if we look, zoom out and we look across the world, what it looks like, we have many big mines in the world that has only fly-in, fly-out operations, meaning that there's no societies established near the mine site, no people living there, and so on. But here we have, I think, very good examples on how we actually, the societies are much benefiting from what happens in the mine. And to extend it further, if we zoom out and we look at a region, what it means for a region with this type of operations, there are studies showing that we have in Europe some regions that are a bit different from the rest of the Europe when it comes to how many highly educated people we have in those regions. And our region up in the northern part of Sweden is one of those. Stockholm is another. It's much due to the fact that we have a university, but the university is there very likely because we have our industry up there. We have the mines, we have the railway, we have the steel industry because we have the mining industry up there. So the mining industry has contributed to this being a knowledge intensive region with all that that means. It means that we can develop other industries such as Northvolt, the battery industry and everything. So it has very long term implications for a region when you establish this kind of operations. Very positive, if we do it right, very positive implications.
Mm. But so what you mentioned, this with like fly in, fly out type of mining operation, would that be the like worst case example for how to deploy a mine? And how come you choose to do that? Is it because there is no people living close by, that it's really in the middle of nowhere? Or is it because other reasons?
Yeah, I mean, if you look worldwide, and Åsa knows more than me about that because she's a geologist, but we know that our deposits are not very often located where people live, like Australia as an example. The big deposits are located far away from the coast, generally, where there are no cities and there are no people living. It's difficult with infrastructure and so on. So it means that you fly people in, they work for a week, and you fly them out, basically. So that's normally what happens. But then again, the Kiruna area was a very remote location before the mine started. And now it has a railroad, it has an airport, and it's very integrated in the Swedish infrastructure for transport.
Mm, so I guess, I mean, even if there isn't a society there at start, it might become one, or you could actually create one over time. But I'm thinking in my head also that we talked about earlier, and maybe you don't want to live next to a mine. Is it really bad that you have these very remote mines where people fly in and out and you don't create a society around it? What's the drawbacks if you do it that way?
Well, the drawback, if we go back to the example I took with this being a very knowledge intense region, is that you don't get that kind of effect if you don't create societies around the operations. And I mean, this region is very prosperous, and we have tourism very big. We have the other industries such as steel and water power and so on. And we have a good life quality for people living here. And there's opportunities for that also in other places where we're mining globally, I would say.
Good. Thank you. So what's a final question for you? What would be your advice when it comes to social innovation and social integration within mining, if you gotta give one?
I think the most important thing is that you need to be local, and you have to have staff on site. Me myself, I live in Pajala, and that's very, very important because I meet the local people when I go and do my grocery shopping. Then I stop and talk to them, and they, you know, they can ask me question and how is it going, and what's this and what happened that day, and I noticed that the trucks are not running, why are they not running, and I can give, you know, that instant feedback to the people around here. I think that's very important, but also how we have strategically worked from when we started the mining, and that was to try to, you know, to buy locally, because we know that helps the local companies to grow, and it helps them to develop. So that's something that's very important for us, the local purchases, and that's something, one of our sustainability goals actually, that we are following, you know, several times per year to make sure that we are, you know, that we are not going on the wrong path and starting to, you know, to buy too much from other parts of the country, but really to try to support the local companies, and also to recruit locally. That's another thing that's been important for us, and we see now that the municipality of Pajala has the lowest employment rate that it's ever had. So we can really see that is contributing to the society. But also another example I would say is the projects that we are running when it comes to restoration of wetlands. So we are working very hard with the goals towards creating a greater biodiversity and compensating for the lands that we are taking. So we have now started up several projects where we're restoring wetlands and where we are actually using local contractors that had invested in the right equipment, and they are now learning and we are building the knowledge among the local contractors how to do these types of restoration. So I think, you know, that interaction and to be prepared to give to the society and learn, even if it takes a little bit longer maybe to educate the people or educate the local companies, I think in the long run that will be beneficial.
Yeah, I have a question for you also, Åsa. I mean, we know for a fact that the most, if we have some sort of resistance towards the new mining operations, it's normally more problems for people not actually living in the area close by. We know that where we have mining operations, there's a very big and strong support from the local people for the mining operations. But when we want to start new mines, we have a problem. And we know that the resistance not always comes from the local people. Can you comment on this? Why is it like this?
No, I completely agree with you on that. And that's what we see as well, that the further away you go from the actual operation, the greater the resistance is against the mining. And I think that that's something that has now, you know, grown over the last decade as well, and it has increased. And I think that a lot of people actually don't know what mining is all about and how it works and how the mining companies are interacting with the society, and that a lot of people who's never visited a mine or who's never been in a mining region actually has maybe a picture of the mining, the picture you get maybe through media, you know, how it's in Africa or in other countries where the mining and the environmental legislation is not so advanced as it is here in Sweden, actually. So I think it has a lot to do with knowledge, and that a lot of people think that mining, you know, disregarding which type of mining it is something that is polluting the water, it's polluting the air. But you can actually mine in a way that doesn't affect the environment in such a bad way.
That's interesting. I haven't thought of it that way, because as you say, you get the media picture that the people living close by are the ones who's mostly affected and also negative. Is it so that sustainability in general has become something that is more important for all of us? And as you say, that media might give a polarized picture that, mining is always bad, no matter where it is placed for the society, for the nature and so on. And then you think that the people living close to the mine doesn't like it, just per fault, per se. You actually don't know. As you said, I didn't know that the people close to mine actually that they actually want the mine and are pro it. I always thought that they were the biggest people against it.
No, I think so. And I actually think that what's happening now when it comes to the, you know, the green revolution that we're talking about, and all the electrical cars and all the solar panels that we need, I think that has really raised the question about our needs for metals, and actually the need, the greater need for metals that we will have in the future. So I think that's a good thing, because I think that will make a lot of people understand that this is actually something that is necessary for what we are, what we're going through now. So I think that's extremely important.
Yeah. Well, I guess then the paradox I mentioned before, that I mean, we all want an electric vehicle, but we don't want to live close to a mine. It's not really true then, because there are actually societies and people that live close to a mine and enjoys it and don't see a problem with it. So it might be a picture that people not living close to a mine and not being into a mine have, but it necessarily isn't true then.
No, I definitely think so.
I think so too, Sara, and we see this when we do surveys about the general attitude towards mining. It's very clear that it's more opponents, for instance, in Södermalm in Stockholm than it is in Kiruna, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because we do a yearly survey among the population in Pajala, how they, you know, see and how they, what they think about our operation. And what's very interesting is that when we ask the younger group that are between 18 and 34 years old, how they see our operation, 98% are in favor of our operation and think that, you know, that we are contributing to society. So it really shows that wow. That the younger generation and the future actually wants the mine here, because that gives them a possibility to stay here. It really, you know, gives them a future here in the area where they otherwise would have had to move somewhere else.
I will take that number with me. 98% of the young people are in favor, yes, for the mine being there. And something maybe for the people living inside the Malm to think about before they oppose to a mine that they never visited. Well, we let that be the final words. Thanks a lot, Åsa, for joining the podcast. And thanks again, Jenny, for a great episode.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Åsa.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you like what we're doing, remember to subscribe. And if you really like our podcast, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. Remember, innovation is what makes the impossible possible, and it will all start with you.